50s. I am 50. The 29th of April, 2003 to the 28th of April, 2004. Above. Two Blank Pages by James Sutty.
Below. The Ticking of the Clock by Alice Ricks. I began my 50th year waking on a cold floor, spilling out of a borrowed sleeping bag to the sound of distant crying. It is 2003, and a boat is sailing over the ripples of the Black Loch in a slow crawl, dragging green sludge beneath its bulk. My oars are no longer aligned, my direction no longer certain. A kettle boils, screaming against a strangely orange sky. A stained teacup with a round teabag sitting patiently on the ceramic bed awaits the great pouring. The steaming flow of water brings its own murky orange ripples to muddy the way. So back into the darkness I fall. Up until now, my dark subconscious kept its distance, separated by youthful arrogance and steady streams of music. This April morning, the boat drifts ever closer towards my ragged edges. I feel the pull of currents, as if the gravity of the room was a TV screen. I see myself laid inside a borrowed tea bag next to a sleeping bag full of hot water. If you can tune in with me, stare at the screen, you will see the distortion comes from the other side. Stepping through static warm fuzz, we enter a living room. A child stands next to the TV, holding a magnet against the picture of me inside the bag. It is an old-fashioned metal horseshoe kind, with painted red ends. The child is 4 years old. She has long brown hair tied up in pigtails, one higher than the other. Her mother is in the kitchen behind her with the radio on. Someone is crying. Ain't got your money or your class. Ain't got your friends. Got no art schooling. The girl stands calmly, staring into the broken static before her. Her cat, Tiger, lies asleep in front of the log effect gas fire. The radio is up loud, and the crying is coming from the kitchen. Another stone is landing in a faraway shore, and the cat's paws twitch in his sleep. Another ripple. Outside the house and down the lane, a large white water tower looms over the brow of the hill. The lampposts flicker and the lights fizz into a low wattage glow. A police car drives slowly by, while part of the road lies trapped behind a row of faded traffic cones. A crackling jolt opens my eyes and I am alone on the floor, and it is 2003. A cold sweat soaks through to the folded clothes I am using as a pillow. It is 29th April and I am 50 years old. This week's NME lies open on the floor. I see the article I went to sleep with. Hundreds of mourners attended Nina Simone's funeral today in the south of France. It is coming back to me. She passed away in her home last Monday at the age of 70. Her ashes are to be scattered across several African countries. The news pierces afresh through my fabric, slamming doors in my functioning self. 2003 brings gigantic Saharan dust clouds across Europe. I see the orange skies at night and my mind races. I feel the steadying glow of ideas. A fire grows inside my soul again, and the old ashes are still warm. I feel quietly afraid. In a small South Leeds suburb, 17 grams of Nina Simone's ashes have found their way into the White Water Tower. 17 grams have travelled 3,721 miles in an orange swirling dust cloud. Around the corner, the radio can still be heard in the kitchen of the little girl. She dropped the magnet at the side of the now broken TV and ran outside. Above her, orange clouds radiate, and she imagines waking up one day next to a beach full of pebbles, full of holes. She cries out into the night, for reasons unknown to her, a sound from deep inside her soul. Wayoo! Somewhere deep beneath the South Lead soil, directly underneath the Whitewater Tower, there is a ley line. This ancient line connects directly to its other end, which lies directly beneath the dark waters of the Black Loch, up near the source of the Penkiln Burn. Unbeknownst to me, 2003 connected 17 grams of the ashes of the High Priestess of Sol with the Penkiln Burn. The stone landed via the ley line and was carried by the force of the little girl's cry. For the next 13 years I would travel the world, performing in the 17. The 17 would carry me further on the wind, through many tides and over many stony beaches. The little girl with the long brown hair would perform at the final performance of the 17 in Liverpool, but I did not know this until I wrote these words. I do not recall the moment of decision around the 17. The combination of global winds, ashes, and a child's cry, sown by water tower and loch, fusing white and black, brought my 50th year some dark momentum. A voice that reached my soul in life, in death, would knit together my soul with the souls of strangers. A music so strong in life that in death it would silence all music. This silence embraced me, whilst the boat creaked closer still. Delicate hands with broken nails silently slid the oars through the gentle lapping mass of the Black Loch. On the edge of the loch is a small stone wall. Someone has painted in foot-high white letters these words: "Imagine going to sleep and no silence has arrived." These were the nights of my first half-century. Music filled every inch of sleep and every inch of life. I began to hear the stories falling late that autumn, 2003. I heard them before I felt the changes they brought. My soul began to remould. The melting was done. The setting had begun. The tie around the neck, the noise around the loch, the two pigtails, the broken nails, the ticking of the clock.
A troubled dream. Senseless. By Soren Carstensen. Blink. As far back I can remember, I've had this dream. The dream troubles me, startles me, even frightens me. But it's been going on for so long, I cannot tell why it frightens me. Maybe it's the repetitiveness of it that troubles me. What used to be scary has now perhaps turned into something so filled with predictability that the clichés themselves have become scary. But I digress. Let me tell you about the dream. Blink. In the dream, I am alone. My age varies, from child to adult, youngling to senior. That is the only thing that changes in the dream. I am somewhere in the old Norse countries, Viking country, north. I am on a beach, but it's not sunny. The weather is grey and foggy. Dark clouds loom in the horizon. The air filled with that special electric spine-tingling sensation your body can feel right before a violent thunderstorm erupts. You can almost taste it. Metal. My feet are bare, buried in the cold, sticky sand. The wind picks up, making the waves hit the beach harder and a little louder, almost like Father Ocean is making love to the sandy beach of Mother Earth, with the whooshing sound somewhat resembling the earth exhaling deeply after a long, satisfying night of passionate lovemaking. Looking to the horizon, I can see sails. Red and white striped sails flailing in the wind. As the sails move closer, I can see the carved head of a dragon on the front end of a shallow longboat, shields decorating the sides. Men are rowing rhythmically. A tall robed figure is standing on the keelson right before the mast, chanting incoherently. Rhythmic. Hypnotising. I can't move. The ship is coming closer with every long rowing stroke from the men on board. A bright lightning flashes through the skies and in the distance. I can hear the haunting ring from a small bell in a nearby church. Muffled voices drowned in the wind, an ear-shattering thunderclap beats on my eardrums, and a high-pitched sound follows. But I can still hear the monotone chanting from the robed figure on the longboat. And just like me, the figure isn't moving. The face is covered in a dark shadow from the hood, yet I can still feel the hidden eyes are fixated on me. The invisible mouth smiling as the chant grows louder. I blink. Movement. The now outstretched arm of a mysterious figure on the boat is pointing at me. Long, pale fingers. The hand is decorated with ancient runes, with a golden ring embellished with a sparkling blood-coloured ruby hugs the index finger. I blink again, and I feel a cold hand on my shoulder. The figure is standing right in front of me now. I can feel the icy water caressing my legs. But it's not as cold as the hand of the faceless figure that is now touching my cheek. Still the chant continues, on and on in an endless cycle. I blink. I am now standing on the deck of the longship, right in front of the chanting figure. He reaches inside his cloak and produces a set of modern-day earphones. He places them on my head, the ear cups completely covering my ears. The other end is connected to a tiny jack in his chest. I can hear tribal-like drums, loud music entangled with the chants. Cold hands firmly grasp my shoulders and violently turn me around. The ship is close to the shore. As the longboat hits the shallow waters of the beach, the men pick up their weapons, jumping from their seats. Their eyes filled with rage, spit and saliva flow from their screaming mouths. The air is filled with deafening war cries. I am terrified, and I can feel the wooden deck beneath my feet tremble as the men run past me. On the beach, I can see people approaching. They don't possess the courage of warriors. They all look scared, terrified. That's when I realise I actually know the people. They're my family, my friends. People I've known throughout the years. Relatives. Co-workers. Steel meets steel. Steel meets flesh. Men fall. And women become widows. Children become orphans. I can hear the roaring sound of burning houses, and the rancid smell of burning flesh meets my nostrils. I still can't move. It feels like there's a block of... It feels like there's a block of concrete around my ankles. My lips part, and I scream as loud as I can, white noise escaping from my vocal cords until my throat burns. On the beach, something is glistening. When the men are cut open, gold coins escape their veins, mixed with their sticky blood. As the coins hit the sand, they turn into small nuggets of coal. The scream from my throat disappears, my mouth still wide open, music still blaring in the headphones. I feel numb. The mysterious figure behind me grasps my shoulders, and everything turns dark. Blink. I open my eyes, and I am sitting in front of a large table filled with all my favourite food, everything imaginable. The robed figure is sitting across from me. I can still hear the chants, and I realise I still wear the headphones connected to his chest. His hand gestures, signalling me to begin consuming the food. I feel hungry, famished, but something is off. I can't smell the food. The figure gestures again. Eat. The food fills my mouth, but it is utterly tasteless. I chew on a mouthful of food, but feel nothing. I try something else, still the same. No smell, no taste, and no matter how much I eat, it's like I can't satisfy my hunger. I can't feel full. The hunger is still there. Blink. I am in a bed, in a large room, filled with flickering candles. A group of robed figures surround the bed. I can hear the constant chanting, but realise it's coming from the headphones. At the foot of the bed, I can see the now familiar figure. The cord from the headphones still attached to the chest. I can't feel the heat from the candles, but I don't feel cold either. The figures disrobe, revealing beautiful bodies covered in runes and strange markings. Still, their heads are hidden in shadows. They reach down, touch my body, caressing me. But I feel nothing. I can't feel their touch. I am completely numb. Blink. I am in a room. The room is empty. The white walls are devoid of paintings or pictures. There are no windows. The only piece of furniture is the chair I'm sitting on. From the look of my hands, I'm an old man now. Frail. Numb. I can only hear the rhythmic chanting in the headphones. A familiar figure walks around me, cord dangling from the jack in his chest. I can't feel his touch as he places his hands on my shoulders. The only senses I have left are sight and hearing. My eyes and ears. He kneels down in front of me. The volume of the chanting increases. I can't sense anything else except the constant chanting in my ears, rhythmic, annoying, hypnotising. His hands slowly rise to his hood. As he pulls the hood back, I can see that he is smiling at me. The last thing I see is his face. It is familiar. It's a face I've seen a million times. It is my face, grimacing, mouthing the chant in the earphones. I try to close my eyes, but I pry them open with my fingers. Everything around my face smiling back at me begins to glow. A bright, blinding glow burns my eyes. Still, I hear chanting. Completely robbed of all senses now, except hearing, which is the only sense I wish I didn't have. I'm surrounded by an odourless, tasteless, senseless darkness. My ears are ringing from the constant chant. It goes on and on without end. It's inevitable. It is my destiny. I cannot escape it. One chant. One word. Moo. Blink. I wake up.